Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowring. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we'll sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these artists. Conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today we're having lunch with Chris Norris. Chris, welcome to Zero Hour. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Tim.
Before the show, we were talking about me doing an auction for 1708 and that I had apparently had sold an apple pie for you guys.
Yeah.
tell me, how did I get into the apple pie sales business?
Well, it came with trying to, I guess, self-promote ourselves, actually, as far as Feast is concerned. And
As far as what is Feast?
Feast, yeah.
What's Feast?
And Feast is the collaborative group that I work with. That involves Stephanie Lundy and Terry Brown and C.J. Hahn and Terrell Bolton.
Right.
And we got together and started working almost 4 years ago now. Stephanie and I wanted to... Stephanie's background is in fashion, mm-hmm. and my background is in sculpture.
Oh, so that's where the apple pie came from.
And that's where the apple pie comes from. And... we were both a bit unsatisfied with our own work at the time, and mm-hmm. we just started to talk. We got along really well, and really hit it off. And we were like, "Well, let's do something together." And in doing so, we started to drag these other people into it.
Right.
And so we liked the way our work was shot when we made sculpture, you know, and the way it looked in photographs. So we're like, "Well, let's do some photography pieces." And so,
you were a sculptor. She's a sculptor.
Yes.
Okay. So yes. You were making pieces collaboratively?
Not initially.
You were shooting your pieces collaboratively?
We were shooting the pieces collaboratively.
Okay. That's interesting. So you took three-dimensional work and made it two-dimensional and found it more interesting?
Pretty much, because instead of stop making sculptures, it started to become costuming and styling and that kind of stuff as far as like actually using people in the photographs.
Okay. You know. So the photographs were of, tell me what they look like.
Well, some of them involved, really, each of us are in them. And, you know, and like okay. one of them, I might be like a bumbling security guard. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm kind of heavy set. So I did my Dennis France thing and that kind of thing. And another one, Terrell, was like this debutante who's dressed in this gold gown and she's mm-hmm. sitting at this table spying on the plate of donuts because she wants to, okay. to sneak one of those and it would be inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the early work had that kind of thing going in it where there's something
like Cindy Sherman sort of.
I
mean, I don't know if everybody listening knows who Cindy Sherman was, but you know, Cindy was someone who took pictures in the, I guess, sort of mid-late 70s and onward into
yeah.
these days and dressed up in some, no, yes.
I would say it definitely come. Maybe it has something to do with that, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't. It doesn't look like Cindy Sherman at mm-hmm. all. And pretty much, mostly because of our color and the use of like. I mean, I think we're more controlled than she is mm-hmm. actually, as far mm-hmm. as like what we're doing in the photographs,
creating the image. Yeah.
And a lot of the images have to do with. Just different things that we talk about and think about as being like children of the 80s. I mean, it's like...
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Because my next question was, why are you doing this?
Right.
Well, let me get this right. You spend your time. And the only reason I ask it this way is to play devil's advocate. I'm hoping people are listening mm-hmm. who want to know about art but don't know about
right,
it.
Right, right.
So they tune in and some guy's talking about getting dressed up and taking pictures of himself and they're going, what in the world? Why?
Why? Well, yeah, well...
because who has an answer
one,
to that
one,
question?
One thing, one reason is because it's funny. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it amuses us. And Stephanie and I were talking just yesterday about, I mean, if anything about Feast, what it is, I mean, you don't make any money doing this. You're throwing money at it constantly.
Right.
And, you know, we were talking yesterday, well, we do this basically, instead of going to the Bahamas for a vacation, you know, we put our money into putting on these shows and doing the work. I mean, for us, like, it's enjoyable, actually. I like mm-hmm. the process of doing it. We mm-hmm. get along really well. We have a show coming up next year, and so far Feast has managed to do a big show every year for the last, well, 2 years. Well, that's not a lot. And then next year again, and we treat it as like band camp. It's like, oh, Stephanie, you know.
So
like,
you enjoy the creative process.
Yeah.
What it takes to sit down and say, okay, we know how we're going to, we have a sense of where we're headed. Yes.
Right. Yes.
We have no idea how we're going to get there, what it's going to look like when we get there.
Yes.
So there's right. some sort of journey and excitement involved in that.
Right. Because it constantly changes.
And it constantly changes. So it's almost the thrill of being creative.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Uh-huh.
So when you say show, what does that mean? I mean, are we talking about looking at photographs? Are we talking about looking at installations? Are we?
We're talking about installations.
Really?
At this point.
Oh, okay.
And we did a show at 1708 a year ago, and this past March we did a show in Houston. And they basically, the work's become about the gallery social, if you will, like the fact that people get together mm-hmm. for these openings.
Right.
And like, that's the only time they really get together mm-hmm. or people go into the spaces sometimes and see the work. And so we started to play with that and making the opening more elaborate than mm-hmm. what would be a normal opening. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking about it. Really, when we got the 1708 show, I started thinking about it in terms of what the First Friday event provides to the community and how many people kind of go out now.
Yeah, First Friday, for anybody who's living in a cave out there, is First Fridays in downtown Richmond on Broad Street with galleries and off Broad Street now. All the galleries are open. People come down and look at the work. And
right.
it really, it's striking. It's like being in a real live city.
Right.
You're down there at 8 o'clock at night, and you got to watch where you're walking because you're going to bump into somebody if you don't.
Right.
Yeah,
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So our take on that for the opening, we were like, well, instead of cheese and crackers, which people barely put out anyways, it was like, well, let's put out donuts. I mean, we've already had this donut theme going. And so we managed to get a little bit of money from 1708 so we could buy donuts for the show. And
it's good when you get a donut grant.
Yeah, we got a donut grant and and money to make like a Neapolitan milk bar. It was like chocolate, strawberry, and vanilla milk was available. And we made this kind of elaborate table with the donuts, and we did it twice because there was a Thursday early preview reception and then the First Friday thing. And it was amazing because that gave people to talk, something to talk about. It was like, did you go get the donut? And then we upped the ante by having two girls, our Feast girls is what we call them, in their red kind of cigarette girl cocktail dresses, walking around with trays of candies and toy cars. You know, mm-hmm. I would just buy Hot Wheels for 6 months anytime I would go into Target and like just kind of collect this. Then the idea was, you know, I just want people to take it. They're going to remember it, you
right.
know? And so since we were a collaborative and a group and we called ourselves Feast, we created what we call our Feast Hollywood sign, which in the small gallery in 1708, we painted a wall tulip pink and there's a giant F-E-S-T in white on the wall. So we kind of branded ourselves into the space.
What's on the wall?
F-E-A-S-T, Feast.
Oh, Feast.
It's
gotcha.
A sign.
Yeah, yeah. I'll spell so good. Feisty, what did you say?
and so like we almost like branded the space. And it was great when you drove down Broad Street
right.
at that time, so you could see the.
Was
the,
there a
the
show
sign.
In the space?
Yeah, all the photography was in that space too.
Whose photography?
Us.
Okay, so it's your show.
It's our show.
Because I'm thinking you're stealing the show here.
No, it's our show.
Aha. Okay.
The whole show.
Now I got it.
Yeah,
the whole show is your show.
The whole show is our show.
Okay.
We rarely do anything in group shows. We mostly everything we've done have been solo shows because we attack the
but
space.
But isn't art, and again, I'm playing devil's advocate here, isn't art supposed to be sort of a serious kind of endeavor that reveals the ultimate truths of our
no.
inner deepest and the other thing? I can't remember. Do you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I know what you're getting at. Yeah, I think
And it sounds like you're saying something very refreshing. What are you saying?
Well, what you just said, I find that very obnoxious, mm-hmm. actually, like mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. I It's not. It's not that. I mean, one of the things we talk about as far as the work is concerned is that the content of the work is the way it looks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Stephanie has described it as ruthless formalism. I mm-hmm. mean, there is stuff going on in there that very much is about color, about formalism,
right.
about aesthetics and how things are put together. It also has this kind of nostalgia feel or slight narratives that kind of come from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure does.
From
yeah. cigarette you know, girls where we, and, yeah, you know, yeah, all that yeah. stuff. Yeah.
And people know what those things are and they can make of it mm-hmm. what they will. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things I find interesting about art is that, you know, I mean, I love stuff that's challenging and I have no idea what it is. You know, mm-hmm. I like things that are difficult to look at myself. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what mm-hmm. I enjoy. And I want to make stuff like that too. I mean, first and foremost, I'm pretty much making the work for me anyways.
You think mm-hmm. this is difficult to look at? Or difficult to understand?
I think it's difficult to understand. I think people want or expect to read something into it.
Uh-huh.
And when they don't get that, they maybe they're a little bit baffled. When really what you're just supposed to do is just look at it and enjoy it. I mean, you know, it right. is exactly what it is. That's it's kind
or
of
or it is what it isn't.
Yeah. That's true too.
Maybe we've come up with a new name for your group. It is what it isn't. Feast. It is what it isn't.
Right.
Well, it's interesting because there sounds like there's a, and I say this delicately, mm-hmm. but there sounds like that modern advertising somehow has crept in there.
Oh, absolutely.
Some of the best pieces of that have crept in there. And I say, if I want to really make my friends who are painters and sculptors angry, I say, mm-hmm. you know, the reality is, and I'm just teasing them, but I say the reality is that the art of our time is on television in 60-second bites. And that 300 years from now, no one's going to give a damn about your paintings. They're going to look back at this stuff and say, this is what this culture was about. This is where some of the best and the brightest put their minds and their talents. This is what impacted that culture in terms of its sense of identity, its sense of purpose, its sense of where do I spend my money. It, you know, I mean, it's just, I mean, I say it tongue-in-cheek yeah. on one hand. On the other hand, I'm not so sure I'm kidding.
I think you're close to being right. Yeah. I feel that way.
I mean, it's sort of spooky, but...
Yeah. I saw someone lecture like a year ago, and they were talking about... they're probably an artist in their mid-career. And they were talking about how young kids today are like all making... They're like, oh, I don't understand. They're always painting monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about that for a little bit. I was like, well, they're not really painting monsters. I mean, I do the same thing. It's like, it's just we're not afraid to deal with image. And my generation, and the generation especially that's come after me, it's like there's been so much images
yeah.
crammed in my head,
right.
you know, and I think in those terms, and I think in the way these things relate. And I feel like one of the things that happens is that technology always changes the way we communicate, and art always reflects mm-hmm. that, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm doing with mm-hmm. this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Painting.
How are you using technology?
It's not that we're using technology. It's just the way you look at things and mm-hmm. think about it. Things have changed because of technology. So mm-hmm. then,
Can you talk about that, or?
I could try.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of hard. You have to know what it was like before to know about what it's like now, which is hard if you were born recently. So,
yeah, you start to get in like Baudrillard territory. I see it in my students how much they've been influenced by mm-hmm. image, you know, mm-hmm. like they are extremely image savvy. And very sophisticated mm-hmm. and more sophisticated. I mean, I went to, mm-hmm. They were the same age I am or I was in 1992. Like they're way more sophisticated than mm-hmm. I remember being or
really?
Remember other students being at that time.
Interesting.
And
why you think there's that much more imagery floating around?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, these kids were born in 86, 88. They're yeah. just freshmen in college, and there was never a time when there wasn't a computer or wasn't a Nintendo or anything like that. So all that's made an influence on them. And I'm thrilled by them, actually, all the time,
mm-hmm.
What they produce. And I always can't wait to see it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or how does that tie back to your work?
It ties back to the Feast work. And my solo work as
right.
a painter, I think one of the things that I've dealt with in both feasts and in my personal work is that I try to create what I would call an image crush. Like, mm-hmm. I actually try to put as much stuff in it as possible.
Why?
Well, one thing, I find it challenging to do that. It
to get all that in there and see if it works?
To get it all in there and see if it works. Yeah, it really is like...
Are you talking about realistic images, abstract images?
In my paintings, they are... They look like drawings, almost look like... Sometimes they look like cartoons or animation. I don't feel like I'm really doing that much or anything different than, say, Gorky or Cezanne or...
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because, like...
Tell me about that.
One of those things about, like, artists like that, I mean, they're setting up these compositions that where, you know, there's... Particularly, say, in a Gorky, like, uh-huh. the things are, like... I feel like the stuff is floating.
Right.
You know? And there's no, like... real horizontals or no real verticals. It's just, and so like you can move around. He still uses black line in there. Mm-hmm. And then it's a lot about color. And so like, it's to me, like it's more about engaging, like, you know, art's doing something there where it's not verbal, you know? And so it's about that engagement, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm still trying to do that, but I'm also now I'm layering,
the images are different.
I'm layering images on top of this stuff too.
That's pretty well said. Okay. You know? I got it.
You know, And I always, like, in painting, I'm always, like, treating everything, like, to me, it's all very gestural. So, like, I'll take the gesture from one thing mm-hmm. and try to put another different kind of image on top of it. So, mm-hmm. But I'm always, like, battling out with my borders. Like, I don't like to deal, I do like to deal with, whether I'm doing sculpture or doing painting, like, the square or the rectangle, you know, basically is my enemy. And, you know, if you're doing an installation, then the room that you're doing the installation in wants to eat your work, you know? Right. And the same thing as far as the rectangle and the painting. So, like, it's all about that kind of threshold stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I'm battling against that compositionally and formally when I'm putting things together. Mm-hmm. As far as what they mean, like, people ask me all the time, well, is there a narrative in this or is there a story? And, like, I'm usually my response is no, there isn't. But maybe there's some allegory, mm-hmm. and maybe there's broken narrative in it.
Right.
There's definitely something you can look at and get out of it. But there's a lot of anxiety in the work, and particularly
a lot of anxiety.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Particularly in the paintings, uh-huh. where I feel like they are. In each of them, they're pretty violent, and something's about to happen. You know, mm-hmm. and I set the situation up in all of them. I kind of get the giggles sometimes when I come up with when I come up with some of the things that I get, just because I know that it'll be, you know, it's thrilling to me. Like, you know, it's almost like, you know, you're plotting out your own whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to describe it, but like I find it challenging. I find it kind of fun, and I'm like, all right, I came up with this, and I didn't know I was gonna come up with that. And lots of times I just start cold, so I don't.
Well, that's very important.
You know, I don't know what's going to happen in the end. Yeah.
Everybody I've interviewed says that.
Right.
I don't know a single artist who says, I know what I want, I know where I'm going, and I'll know when I get there.
Right.
It's like, I mean, that really is the sort of the conundrum of all this that is unexplainable. You know, because most of us in our lives, you know, we plan. We start at point A. We want to get to point B. What's it going to take to get to point B? Blah, 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 you know, and in business and then, you know, and everywhere else. Of course, life, if you want to get it on a real level, has a whole other idea.
Right.
You know, life is, Woody Allen said, life is what happens while you're making other plans.
Right.
And I think that can apply to art, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But most of us, with the exception of artists, most of us are terrified of that.
Right.
And are uncomfortable with that. And artists are the only ones I've talked to who embrace that. Is that true for you? Do you embrace that kind of just sort of, well, I'm just going to step off the edge here and see where I land?
Well, I don't mean not step up. I feel like it's like going up to bat. Mm-hmm. It's terribly difficult to be an artist. I mean, financial reasons and everything else. Mm-hmm. And to choose to do it is like, well, it's probably much I just chose the hardest thing I could possibly ask to do.
Right.
And to really commit to it is like, you know, another thing. So
how have you dealt with all that? I mean, we only have another 20 minutes.
Okay.
No, but I mean, because I've heard that also. And I believe that. I mean, not so much heard it, but it's believe it, that first of all, it is the hardest thing you can probably choose to do. Why do you think that?
Well, there's no real support for it.
Right.
The other thing about art, and I think people forget or don't know or don't understand, it really is a business. I mean, mm-hmm. and you have to think about it that way. Mm-hmm. And pretty much as an artist, you're a small business. Now, can you actually move the merchandise, or is that important? And like, yeah. art has always been about that. I mean, people who think that it's not about money is ridiculous, because you know, you wouldn't have art for art's sake without that. You know, there's guys back in the mid 19th century when modern art was kind of born, or late 19th century, were like, you know, they needed to eat, so they changed the way they painted. And so what they started to do is paint life in France, mm-hmm. what it was like then.
And on back hundreds of years ago. Artists were supported by wealthy landowners.
Aristocrats, the church, kind of thing. That model fell out, and then artists had to sell work a different way. Mm-hmm. And so I when I started to think about it more in those terms, when I got out of graduate school and realized, hey, they didn't teach me anything about this when I was in school.
Right.
And things started to change, and that's kind of where Feast started to take off, and then my solo work at the same time.
I started to think about what? About actually selling stuff?
Started thinking
making
about
a living?
Not selling stuff or making a living necessarily, but exactly what models are out there for showing work. You know, how does this gallery system work? How does the nonprofit system work, which is different from the commercial?
And the question of how do you...
And how do you get exposure?
How do you get
work out there?
You know, all of that business end of it.
Yeah.
And then as an artist trying to find and express something uniquely your own, which is really what it's kind of about.
Yeah.
How do you do that without compromising that vision?
Right, exactly.
So you're sort of this catch-22.
It's a catch-22.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to write well. Uh-huh. You know, you have to be able to keep your resume up. You have to be able to submit proposals. You know, it's a whole lot of work that happens outside of the studio.
Right.
You know.
I think most people don't know that.
People don't know that.
You know, I think artists just, you know, kind of go make art and somebody comes along and makes them rich and famous or not.
It doesn't happen that way. You work really, really hard at making contacts. Mm-hmm. And there's this whole business side of it that is about networking.
Ever thought about doing anything else?
No.
No. Interesting. Interesting.
No. Yeah.
Do you think art picked you or you picked art?
I think art picked me. I was always one of those people who drew mm-hmm. when I was little, and I just never stopped. You know,
you have to stop.
I know. I got up at 7 this morning. I started working on something. So no, I don't.
That's great.
I don't stop. Even in like when I teach, like I could teach. I could be at school from 8:30 to 5 or later, and I'll still make. You know, usually I get an hour or so in a night. I'm producing. Constantly making work. Days off, the no days off. Like a Saturday, I get up and pretty much work for 8 to 10 hours. And
so it is a passion.
Maybe go to Target in between somewhere.
Target's good.
Yeah, I love Target.
What do you got? Now, wait a minute. You're an artist, man. You're not supposed to love Target.
Oh, yeah. No, I love Target.
That's great. Well, what about your paintings? We talked about Feast. I know it's impossible to talk about paintings on radio, but let's do it anyway.
Okay.
Tell me about your paintings. What you talked a little bit about them in terms of them being
the
reference
images,
to cartoon images.
The cartoon images and that kind of stuff. Comics, I feel like some of that stuff gets dismissed. In a big way. And really, comics in themselves, they're considered one of the few American inventions, like jazz mm-hmm. and comic mm-hmm. books are another one. And one of the things that I'm fascinated by, when I go back and look at the stuff that was in the early turn of the century when, you know, the newspapers were, mm-hmm. do these elaborate, large-scale comics, basically, mm-hmm. so they could sell the newspapers to immigrants who couldn't mm-hmm. read. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the origin of it. And then it got on to where people were like, well, let's reprint this material for a dime and sell a bunch of books. And then it got to original material in the 40s and during World War II. And so basically comics were something that were invented by a bunch of young kids, usually second generation, immigrants who couldn't be drafted yet to go fight overseas, and they made up a medium, mm-hmm. you know, because those are the people they could hire to draw.
Right.
And they made up a medium based on time factor, like, you know, you had to get the book done and print it. So the whole medium was invented. Basically, there was no such thing as style. I have students now that say they have a style, and I get flustered with them. they just invented things so they get things done. And so, like, this whole thing just kind of, like, it was a very elaborate thing that started to develop over the 20th century. And so animation plays into it. Mm-hmm. You can't ignore Disney. You can't ignore the anime, which comes out of Japan, which is their riff on Disney. And now people in America are, like, doing their version of that. And it's very elaborate. So all that kind of stuff is what I've studied and think about, you know.
Really?
Plus Gorky on the side, you know.
Yeah.
And
with a little Gorky.
With a little Gorky, you know.
Can't forget the Masters.
A little Gorky, a little Vermeer.
No, I mean, I'm laughing, but I understand it. I think it's delightful. I don't, it's a stupid word, but really, it is what you're saying.
And how do you and like those are my interests, and I pull it together in my work.
Right.
You know.
Fabulous.
And hopefully, young, like, adolescent, teenage boys love my work. Like, they just, because of all that stuff, I mean, it just appeals to them.
They get it.
They totally get it.
Huh.
I get, like, a line of, like, at the opening a year ago, I had a line of students who I didn't know who they were, but, and they all, like, wanted, and they want me to look at their work, too, you know, it's like.
So is their aesthetic similar to yours? Are you finding that you're just sort of out in front of these kids and they're.
I guess I'm out
of front
of them.
Are you the grandfather of this? Is that what's happening?
I don't know. I hope not. I think because the...
Ladies and gentlemen, this is not an old man I'm talking to here, but... but he may be experiencing his first blush of grandfatherdom.
The line work that's in the paintings, I do, the way I do them is I'll lay everything out in pencil, and then I paint flat color.
Right.
Lots of super high contrast colors, and then I basically draw or ink on top of that. So it's the way animation cells are kind of put together, but a little bit in reverse. But these things are like 3 by 4 feet, you know, and so it may take 30 to 40 hours to complete one. And the line work in them are extremely detailed because that somehow satisfies my OCD, you know, like, I think that's what they're relating to, like people often tell me they can't believe how much work is in them. And I don't think about it because it's just second nature to me.
Right.
Yeah, it's just what I do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can spend, you know, you spend hours doing something and then you, like, you walk away from it. And I don't know why I have my vision at all, actually, because my nose is to the paper or the canvas most of the time. Like, but if people want to see it, you go to feastrichmond.com.
Feast,
F-E-A-S-T.
F-E-A. You better spell it.
F-E-A-S-T, Richmond. I won't spell that. .com to see that work.
Great.
For my paintings, you go to Ada Gallery or ADA
Gallery.com.
Oh, okay. And click on artists and click on me and Chris Norris.
Me being Chris Norris.
And I'll show there opening, November 24th at ADA Gallery with first Friday opening in December.
We got to end, I'm afraid.
Okay.
I know we could talk for hours and hours, and this has been fascinating. And once again, this is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us, and I want to thank you all for tuning in, and we look forward to seeing you again on the radio next Friday at 12:30.